Session number 27053.
To Dre, Reel 7. Now, we're talking about your time at Britannia Barracks and your first 6 weeks preliminary training. What would you do in the evening? I mean, was there any recreation in Britannia Barracks for you? Was there a canteen or anything?
Yes, there was a naffy where they sold weak beer and that sort of thing. There was no fear of drunkenness because we never had enough money. My money was 3 shillings a day, but I allowed my mother a 7 shillings of that was paid to my mother in allowance. That they recommend this so that you paid your next of kin, so you had a few bob when you came out of the army, I suppose. We also had to pay sixpence, I think it was, for haircuts and general barrack room damages, they used to, we called it, but there was a deduction of about sixpence a day out of your money. The money we drew, although it was 21 shillings a week that our money was, we drew 10 shillings.
Now, when you went to, what was the canteen like? Could you describe?
Now, we went to the canteen, yeah. Well, there was naffy girls in there, the girls that, there was just a table. It was much like a caf today, like with ordinary tables with a sort of similar sort of top to what they have today. I don't know, oil cloth or something on the top of them and chairs. There was nothing, no one much comfort.
You could have a pint or you could have a tea in a...
They sold, pot. Yeah, and they used to sell pints of still lemonade, a lot drunk because it was cheaper and, you know, you have a big pint of it, you could sip away and chill. You could get in there, you could buy eggs and chips or something like that as well. Rock cakes and tea, and there would... Though sweets were rationing, they were. You could buy a small chocolate bar and this sort of thing. Cigarettes, of course, you could buy in there. Yeah, it was a gathering place in there.
And was there any actual entertainment there? Was there sort of games like darts or billiards or?
Yeah, there was certainly snooker tables and but they. Well, I didn't.
Snooker then or billiards?
Billiards and snooker, but it was snooker as well. Mine snooker was the most popular, but they did have billiards. But yes, they did have these things. But of course, you in a big barracks, a lot of men, and they get very crowded. So it was sort of usually the permanent staff that monopolised all the snooker tables and that sort of thing. You see,
was there be a piano, any music?
Yes, piano, and you always, yes, and there's always some wit in among the crowd that could play a piano and crack a few jokes and that. Oh yes, the piano was quite a popular thing and popular songs. There was a other rooms as well, what we called the writing room, where you could go in and write with a radio on, not loud, and it would be usually music, Vera Lynn singing and things like this, you see. But, yes, you could write letters in them, and writing paper and envelopes were always free, plenty of them, and there was pens, because we didn't have ballpoint pens in them days. It was all pen and ink. Or fountain pen.
Did you write home? I mean, did you use it for what it was meant to be? Did you write home? Or?
Oh, yes, I wrote, yeah, not, but say once a fortnight to my mother. Yes, I did. And I received letters. Oh, yeah, I corresponded with home. And
now, how did you get on with your other recruits? I mean, can you talk a bit? And if there's any you particularly remember, you know?
Well, we didn't have, they were mostly North Country lads from Yorkshire and... And up north, there was very few from... I didn't know no one from Devon. I found their lingo was a bit strange to me. Some of them, even the Yorkshiremen, were very broad. And
I presume you had a Devon accent then.
I did, yes, and of course. And none of us had... We were all boys, and there was not only myself, there was, I would imagine, although we never used to tell one another that we were underage in case they sneaked and told someone... But I imagine a lot of them were just underage, or they were just 18, because they were conscripted them at 18, you see. And so we'd not had much experience in life, you know, in trades or with girlfriends and things like this. So it was probably juvenile talk, a lot of it, that we talked about.
But there was no trouble, no bullying or anything like that.
There was some bully, yeah.
Tell
there
us
was.
About that.
Well, I knew, for instance, there was a lad from... I'll tell you a story. It happened in a barracks where it was in Norwich. There was a lad from Sheffield and he couldn't read or write. And he was always crying, like, and he'd get a letter from his mother and someone would read it for him. And he had a girl used to write to him, and she was a bit of a simpleton because it was quite illiterate, this letter, things she said and that. And these lads used, in the end, cotton on, and they used to tell him all sorts of weird and wonderful things, how she loved him and all this thing. It wasn't on the letter, really. And he'd get someone else to read it and it'd be entirely different. And he cottoned on in the end that they were, and he got in a terrible temper over it one day, I remember. And he got his rifle, and we had live ammunition, you know, that we had live ammunition in our pouches. And he put a clip of 5 rounds in his rifle and was going to shoot this lad. And true story this is, and of course everyone went deathly white and frightened. Someone rushed to the corporal that was in his little cubo, and the corporal come out and he walked straight up to him and he said, "Now you're not going to do that, put that rifle down." And he was howling and carrying on about this lad that had upset him. But the corporal walked straight up to him. He said, "Now put the," and he was then pointed it in while he was talking, not meaning it, at the corporal. But he walked straight up to him, just pushed the rifle to one side, took it away from him, and emptied the magazine and went to his pouches and took all the live ammo out of it. He was reported. He went off for a day or two. Where he went, God knows. Whether they had a psychiatrist looking at him or not, I don't know. But eventually, when we're coming to the day when we leave these barracks, he was sent to the Pioneer Corps. And we were all infantry soldiers, really, but he was either sent to, some say he was discharged, or some, but actually got a rifle, a live ammunition in it, and threatened this boy. So, because they'd bullied him, there was other things as well that bullied him. Well, bullied him, and they'd cut his bootlaces and things like this, or hide things from him, you know, when he...
Now, he sounds a pretty easy target, yeah. Pretty simple.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Would you join in, or would you just...
I didn't. I, as I sit here, I tell you the truth. I never used to encourage her. And we had two lads in there that were very responsible. And one of them become a general in the end, in my barrack rooms. He wouldn't mind me not telling you. There was two of them. One was called Foster and one was called Iberhardy. And he was...
Iberhardy.
Yeah. He become a general. So I've been told. I don't know what general, whether he's a brigadier general or what, but he went to Bedford School. And I've got a friend of mine. He's in the Western Front Association with me. He lives near him. He went there and he told me that Iberhardy was known as an old boy of the... of the school that had served in the last war. I think he was, I don't know if they went to the Norfolk, because I tell you what happened. When the 6 weeks were up, these two vanished. And we later saw them, and they'd gone to Okchu. There were several lads from the barrack room went to what they call WASB, War Office Selection Board, while we were in the barracks. They'd go off for a weekend or something. And that's what they were, they went to this War Office Selection Board. And they were sort of weighing them and assessing their feasibility of giving them a commission.
Did they stand out, these two lads?
Yes, they did.
In what
yeah.
way? Was it their class or was it their competence?
Competence, especially this Iberhardy. When this chap, my friend, told me that he knew him or knew of him and he had been a general, it didn't surprise me one bit. It was obviously post-war. He wouldn't have been a general in the war.
So it wasn't just that
but he was also a very fine boxer, and he used to represent our company. And this was another one of the entertainments. Nearly once a week they had boxing. And they had this, and he reached the grand final. He was a very good boxer, so he was very fit, and he was a very able lad. But they were intellectual lads as well. They didn't mix with us. They didn't go out with us or anything like this. They had to train with us, of course. But you know, even then, when you're young recruits, they sometimes ask one of the brighter recruits to take over. An NCO may say, or do this, you take that lot over there. He was always selected for this, you see. And the lads went along, they recognised. It was a natural thing, like as schoolboys, they recognised a leader among them.
Did you have any particular pals at the time?
Yes, I had one particular one. He stands there. He was called Cyril Carter, came from Hull in Yorkshire. he was my particular friend, and I
Why did
used.
you pick him? What was so good about him?
He was a nice. He was a nice lad and interesting. He was quite a good lad. He was one of the first among us to become an NCO. He got the rank of a Lance Corporal when we later joined the battalion, I remember. But he was, he was quite knowledgeable and quite a likeable lad. Nice, pleasant to be with. And he was with me until I left the 5th Battalion in Italy later on. But we served together all the time.
Now, what was your relationship like with the corporal and with the other NCOs, the instructors?
Well, they were, look,
Or what
in
did you
six
think of them?
weeks, well, they were all right. A lot of them had been through Dunkirk and that. A lot of them were ex-regular soldiers. And these ex-regular soldiers were quite good to us lads. They didn't shout and bawl and swear like you see in these films and that. They didn't. There was no uncertain terms. They told you what you'd got to do it and you'd done it like. But they weren't cruel with us. But we never knew them long enough to ever. I can't remember one of their names, not the instructors in barracks. They've gone from me because.
What about the officers? Did you see much of them, or
No,
were they?
nothing, hardly at all. We had the officers. One of my company commander had one arm and he'd lost it in the Great War. A lot of the older NCOs, the warrant officers, now all had the First War medals. So I'm very proud of that fact. I've been trained by First World War soldiers that he had one arm he'd lost in the Great War, but he was, you see, on permanent staff. He was quite capable of doing the job, training recruits and that. He didn't come out in the fields with us, but
So he was quite a distant figure as an
yeah,
officer.
all the officers were really. Yeah, they it's different than when they're in a battalion, in a barracks. Yeah.
Now, what about I mean, during the 6 weeks, which is still where we're at, would you be allowed out in the
Oh
evening?
yes,
Where would you
we.
go? Tell us about what the nightlife was. Well, not
Well,
nightlife, but
no,
you know,
no.
what you
Well,
did.
we went to the cinemas, of course. We got in the cinemas, and there was certain cafes in Norwich where we were that we could go in, and certain pubs, but we didn't go in a lot of pubs because, as I say, we never had much money.
Were there any, which were the main cinemas? And because we know we've done Norwich a lot, so
Yeah, I don't
you don't
remember.
remember the names
No,
of the pubs or
I
the
don't.
places.
No.
And were the local people friendly?
Yes, they were. They were indeed. Yeah, and again, they had a strange accent to us because we obviously flirted with girls we met and this sort of thing. And they used to have a strange accent. But as it happened later in life, one of my sisters married a chappy from Norfolk. So,
They were overallly friendly, though, because
yes,
it had been a
they
base a
were.
long time, a barrack town for a
Yes, it
long
had. Must have been. But not from there. Later, we had parades through Norwich, and we had a good reception. Yes, and they had a castle there, a museum castle in Norwich, and this, of course, it got summertime. You see, joining there, 6 weeks it was coming up, and I stayed there a lot longer than the 6 weeks. But we're doing the 6 weeks primary, but later in the summertime. All the girls and on a Sunday afternoon or Saturday, usually cinema Saturday, we would wander up to this museum castle place, and there was, you know, to see what the local talent was like, and so that was a nice place we used to. And then there was the Broads, of course. I remember with this chappy Carter and my friend Carter and a few others having boats out on the playing about on the water there, and. It was quite nice, and sometimes we caught out to a place called Wroxham and on the Broads, a little place. Yeah, we got out into the countryside a bit, so it was quite nice.
Now, after the 6 weeks, did you stay at Britannia
Now,
Barracks, or did you
this
go
is
down to
this is
Nelson?
what happens, you see. I'd volunteered for the Northants, and some were designed for the Norfolk Regiment, And now you have certain exams, if you like.
Well, tell us about them.
Well, they're test. I shouldn't say exam. It wasn't written, but it was test. They tested us. We had to do certain things. We had to run 100 yards, I think in 30 seconds or something. We had to complete a 30-mile route march. We had to do the 1 mile force march, a 1 mile run, and a 1 mile, was that 3 mile, I think, a force march. That means when you're walking at light infantry pace. We had to qualify on the ranges. They took us on special shooting sessions for to get your accuracy with a rifle and a Bren gun, nothing else. We'd done grenade throwing for proficiency. And then when we'd done all this, and we had passed, if you like, for an infantry soldier, our money went up sixpence a day. We got a qualified infantry. Then we knew the end was coming, and of the 6 weeks, they announced where we were going. They didn't all go to the North Ants or the Norfolk. Some went to other regiments. One or two went to the Armoured Corps, and I can't remember all of it. But as I say, Eber Hardy and his friend Foster, they both went off to Okchu. So they weren't, what regiment they went in, I don't know. But there was that was us. I was allocated to the Norfolks, North Ants. And all this time before them, we wore in our hat badge the coat of arms, the general service badge. And we just had on our lapel a coloured ribbon, which indicated the company we're in. So from now on, it wasn't brass numerals, but we had in black writing on our lapels, Northamptonshire. And we wore their badge.
Did you move them?
Yes. Then they said, right, all those that hadn't, they'd selected us through a system of, they gave us a locks of a door lock, and they had to take it to bits and put it back again. And they'd done a certain test to us, and they selected from these chaps, and during our general training, certain lads who had been selected for different things. Now, this is where you asked about the 3-inch mortar. Some were selected, and my friend Cyril Carter was one of them. He was selected for signals, and he was going to be an infantryman in the battalion, but it's going to be in the signals. He had to learn to ride a motorbike, and he had to learn signalling. I was selected to become a Bren gun carrier driver. So I went on a Bren gun carrier course to be trained to drive one.
Now, where was that?
Down at Nelson Barracks. But this is where they shifted us all down to the Britannia Barracks, Nelson Barracks, for this specialist training. And it was for the mortar platoon, so that some of them went to be trained to do 3-inch mortars. And that's why, as I say, I've never trained on one or never fired one. Others went to the signals, and they had a jolly good time riding around on motorbikes and one thing. I did, because I went on the Bren gun carrier course, and they taught us to drive a small, what they call a PU van, first of all.
Well, tell us, how did you...
And then we went, and so we were in our regiments, and we were in these Nelson Barracks.
Were you in a battalion?
No. We were now what they call an infantry training corps. We were primary training unit for the first lot, PTU, yeah, for the 6 weeks. Well, then we went into this infantry training corps for another, it must have been 4 months, because I didn't get on leave.
That would be from February to June.
July, yes, early July. All the lads that weren't selected for anything were instantly sent to the regiments. Some of them were sent to the 4th North Ants that were just ordinary riflemen going. But we lads that had been selected for specialist training, we were retained in Norwich at Nelson Barrack to have this specialist training. And so we were done, because all the other lads that were going to battalion were given their leave, 10 days leave. We didn't get no 10 days leave. It was 5 months before I got home on leave, because I was down, and I... As I say, I'd done this training course on him.
Take me through how they taught. Could you drive already?
No.
Tell me how they taught you to drive a pickup truck.
Yeah, a PU van, they call it, a utility van. It was a small van thing.
And tell me how they taught you.
Very similar. We had a sergeant in beside you, and he would take, say, six of us out. on the streets, out the roads, around Norwich and one thing another. And he would, we all got in around the thing as he explained the workings, he explained to the group. Then he'd say, right, you. And one of us would jump him in the driving seat and he would say, right. So he had told us how to start a car and what the gearbox was about. So we trundled around, and I think we trundled around in the vehicle yard. There was a huge yard, like a barrack square, where the vehicle yard was, where big garages. And we trundled around at about 3 to 5 miles an hour to begin with, gradually building up to about 10 to 15. And then we went out around Norwich quite a bit on these, and we got quite good driving these little vehicles. There was nothing to it, like a small car. And then they took us out with and an officer from the Remy mob, I think it was Remy, came and took us out and drove each one of us. And we then got a license, a provisional license. Not a full license, we got a provisional license to allow us to go on the road, sort of thing. Although we'd been driving around on the road, I've still got my little license, this provisional license. And then they then switched us onto the Bren gun carriers.
Tell me about that, because that's completely different.
Oh, lovely. They make my heart jump every time I see a Bren carrier. There's some at Bovington in there, and I always said if I won the lottery, I'd buy one, because they are available on the road. But so we had to learn how to drive them and basic maintenance of the thing.
Now, tell me how you drove, because they're not driven like other vehicles.
Well, very similar. The Bren gun carrier is driven with a steering wheel, but it's vertical. It's a vertical wheel. It sits there. And what happens, if you're on rough country and it's really jumping and leaping, there's two grips either side of the steering wheel coming out from the dashboard. It's all steel, bear in mind, about a quarter-inch armoured plate all around you. And what you're going to do if you're going to jump a ditch, you leave go of the wheel and you put your foot on the accelerator and hold these grips. There's a pad in front so you don't bang your head, and one behind you. And you race at it as hard and hope you can get across it. Well, but we driving it it's what they call a track differential. There's a huge steel rod goes across the centre. It's got two bogey wheels either side. It's got a big sprocket at the back that drives the track, a small bogey wheel up in the front off the ground. But you've got this set of bogey wheels, two wheels each side on the springs. One, they're running in the track. And this thing, track disalignment rod, it is. When you turn the steering wheel to the right, it forces this rod, forces across, and in actual fact, the tracks will bend like that because it's forcing them. And so you could travel down a road with sort of reasonable bends and you don't lock the tracks at all. The thing steers around it. As I remember then, it was the only track vehicle, track disalignment, they called it. This rod shoved it out. After it got to a certain amount, it couldn't do that. It would put a lock on the right. If you was going to the right, it would put the right lock on and it would swing around. But on a road, on a major A-class road, you could drive one and you wouldn't lock that track anywhere. It would drive, but a tank and them sort of thing had to sort of ease off. And whether they do the track disalignment today, I don't know.
Now, why did you like it so much?
I loved it. It was a lovely vehicle. Well, why I liked it, because it was... I can understand these Green Wellington people down in the country today with their 4x4 off-road vehicles, loving it, going up lanes and that, because we could go anywhere. And we used to go across this mousehold heath. Was a special part of it. And we could drive. We didn't deliberately do it, but if just to, sometimes when we were on manoeuvres out in the country, we'd get on a track of rough ground and we'd have a go. It would take down a tree of 6-inch diameter. It would shove them. It would go at you just go up against it and it would just push. And you could drive through bracken and gorse bushes, providing there was no rocks. You could or water. You could drive and it would just beat the foliage down or the bushes down, and you could drive. And it was so amazing to me to drive off road on cross country.
So it was sort of fun.
Fun. It was lovely. It was really good.
Was it comfortable?
Well, they weren't. They weren't. No. There was no springing as such or anything like that. And when you're in the back, because there's a crew.
Tell me what the crew and who was in there.
Well, you had a driver and you had a tank commander in beside him, usually an NCO. And then in the back, you might have three other men, three others in there. There'd be another driver. Well, they could all drive if they were in a crew of a carrier. If in emergency they could take over, and you had the chappie with the Bren guns and all sorts of things. But there was about a crew of five in them, and of course they had a slit up the front for the carrier commander, and they had what we never used them. Although there is a thing I did have a fire out of one later, was a boy's anti-tank rifle. And these things stuck out the front. They were pretty useless. They were obsolete before I got in the army, but they still had them. And they were supposed to use a machine gun through this slot, like. But they would also be the eyes for the driver, really. Although you could lower it down, there was a tiny slot they could drive through if they were under fire. But normally they kept their head just up enough to see. But they're terribly in the back. You were bouncing around on. There was a bit of padding there, and when they were throwing you about on, it was dreadful. The engine was right in the middle of you in the back, so you were each side of the engine, and the noise was terrible. It was a Ford V8 engine in there, and a roaring of this thing. So what you used to do is lay on this seat and put your boots hard against the engine cover. And you're back against the side wall, and just squash yourself as hard as you could, so that you didn't jump about.
Were they still mainly used, as the name says,
yes,
Bren guns?
Yes.
Is that what they were for, or had they completely utility?
They became a little bit in Italy. They did.
I mean, more in England. I mean, were they still considered really?
Yeah.
As the
vehicle to run. Yeah. Well, that yes, they would. They'd take a Bren gun, rush it forward. Under fire, they could go up and drop, and they could drop ammunition. See, they'd load them with ammunition sometimes and go up, take it forward. In the end, they'd take anything for infantry if the rifle companies were up there needing it, was the Bren guns carriers that took it forward for them, besides the men and the mules, but in Italy. But where the carriers could get, they did. But they also cut a piece off the back and had stretchers in them for bringing back wounded. That was another thing they done.
And how reliable were they?
Quite good. The only thing that was bad on them is this track was made up of little segments, and they had a 3/8 mild steel pin through them. And if you went over a rock sometimes or caught it, that would snap, and your track was off, and your vehicle was out of action. You had no control of it. So it was very dangerous. If you lost a track on the road, and they were governed down to a maximum, I think, of 30 miles an hour, we couldn't go any faster, because if you lost the track, it'd mount the bay, over it went, and you were nearly certain dead if you turned over, because the sides, as I say, quarter-inch plate would just cut you in two almost.